You're listening to episode 3 of the Gaijin Guide, broadcasting to your eardrums out of the Kansai region of Japan. It is February 14th, which means it's Valentine's Day, but the roles are reversed over here in Japan. Before I explain that, let's talk about what I've been doing the last 2 weeks. 2 trips to Nara, 2 to Kyoto, and 1 to Osaka. So I've been a busy bee experiencing everything really this region has to offer. And it's going to be tough to fit it into one show. I might have to split it into two. But before I talk about that, let's just jump right into the intro and get on with the show. So sit back, put those headphones in, put the iPod on hold, and listen to the show. Alright, this show is so massive, I don't even know where to begin. I'm at a loss for words. I might even have to cut something. It's humongous. I feel like I'm having 2 kids at the same time, and they're coming out of the birth canal together. And that, you know, that's just painful. What do I want to start with? I'll start with Nara, and basically that was the thing that impressed me the most out of all the things I've done. So the show's going downhill from here, but hopefully you'll stick with me for the whole thing. So I made the trip out, finally, to Nara Koen, which is basically this park located centrally in Nara, right by the Kintetsu Nara train station. It's an easy walk, no more than 5 minutes, and Nara is really great. I feel like a lot of people who haven't at least read about some of the history of Japan or done some research on their own don't even know about Nara. The other students studying here, when we were talking about places we want to travel, obviously Kyoto's the big hit, but I'm like, yeah. I started talking about Nara, and they're like, Nara, and when I mentioned, used to be a capital for a little while before Kyoto, not striking any bells, but am I glad that I went to see it. And all the friends that went with me were thoroughly impressed. First of all, the city's done just a spectacular job with showcasing the sites it has. It does have 8 World Heritage sites. 8. And that's not even the most in Japan. Kyoto has something like 18. Something big. I might be making that up, but I know it's more than Nara. But so you get to the train station, right when you pop out of the gate, there's the tourist information center there. They have maps in English, they speak English, they speak Korean, French, Russian. I mean, basically, they got their bases covered, and you should probably be speaking one of those languages if you're traveling in Japan. Otherwise, well, forget that, you should be speaking Japanese if you're in Japan, because otherwise, if you're not sticking to Tokyo, or I guess Nara, or probably Kyoto, it's going to be a little tough. And yeah, let's throw Osaka in there too, just for shits and giggles. So first of all, the city's done a great job. Signage is in English too, with big arrows and distances. So, I mean, you can't really get lost unless you're hopeless. And then, what are you doing in Japan? You pop out of a train station, you walk to the park, and the first thing you'll notice, and I kid you not, is the deer. They are everywhere, and I'm not talking about, you know, white-tailed, spotted Bambi jumping around. These are, I like to think of them as big rats, because basically, that's what they are. They just want your food. They're too friendly with humans, and it's ridiculous. It's like a rat, you want to go away, and it just keeps following you. That's what this deer will do. I think they're actually trained better than dogs. I'm not sure on that, but I'll have to check with you. But these are some domesticated deer. First thing I see when I walk into the park is a 4-year-old petting a deer. I'm like, what? Shouldn't the deer be kicking it in the face? And by it, I'm referring to the 4-year-old, which would be a gruesome picture. But, you know, come from America, and usually deer are afraid of people. But here, they love people. One of the reasons being because vendors in Nara Park sell these, not hot dogs, or not even human food, they sell these biscuits that you can feed to the deer. And I think it's about 150 yen for one. And you can get a pack for maybe, what was it, 900 yen. Why would you spend about $9 to feed some deer? I mean, they're not even cute deer. They're ugly. They're mangy. But, of course, when you first get there, you're taking video, you're taking pictures of the deer. I actually took shots, portrait shots of me with a deer. And I actually got one of me hugging a deer. That's how tame these things are. So that'll be one of the first things you'll see when you get to Nara, and you'll probably hear about it before you get there, but the deer are by no means the main attraction. If you're still listening, I want to apologize. I think I just talked about deer for 3 or 4 minutes, and that's ridiculous. Gomendasai Hontoni. I'm just going to jump right in and say what my favorite thing was in Nara Park, or Nara Koen, and that is Todaiji Temple, which is the largest wooden structure in the world, not just Japan, in the world, and my golly, is this thing big. It is ridiculous. It is larger than most buildings you will find in New York City, and I kid you not. Not counting, obviously, the Empire State Building, but this thing, you feel like an ant next to it. Wooden pillars that hold it up are, they look maybe slightly smaller than a redwood tree, and it's just, I mean, it's worth going just for the size of the building itself. But Todaiji Temple also houses the Daibutsu, which is one of the largest bronze sculptures in the world. And this thing, my golly, is it big. Just to give you a little ratio, a normal human being could fit through its nostril. Now, that may be gross to think about, but that's how, I mean, that's how wide the nostril is. Just imagine the rest of it. I have some pictures up online that you can check on my Flickr account. There's a link from the website. Man, it's just, you'll stand in front of it and you'll be in awe, and you'll keep taking pictures just like everyone else around you, and it never ceases to amaze. So once you get over your photo craze, you'll slowly start to circle around the Daibutsu, which dominates the floor space in the building, and on each side it's flanked by, I guess you would kind of call them warriors or something, but I forgot, but they're actually wooden statues that are, I mean, you would think they were huge if they weren't standing juxtaposed to this Daibutsu, but there's the enormous wooden sculptures, and I mean, they're so intricate and beautiful in their own right. They're only dwarfed by the Daibutsu. And you'll slowly make your way around, and you'll see some recreations of Todaiji Temple on a smaller scale, maybe 1 to 50 scale. But basically, the main attraction inside the temple, which is free by... Oh, actually, it's not free. You have to pay, I believe it was 600 yen to get in, but it is worth it, believe me. If you're going to only pay for one thing in Nara Park, it's worth it to see the Daibutsu. But back to the point, as you make your way around, sort of behind the giant Buddha is this pillar, this wooden pillar, and it's one of those that supports the building. But in lower on the bottom of the pillar, they have hollowed out this circle, and its circumference is equal to that of one nostril of the giant Buddha. And tradition or saying goes that if you can fit through this wooden hole, you'll attain enlightenment. And I know you all want to know if I fit through, and the answer is yes. Everyone else who was over at least 7 years old was afraid or embarrassed to try, but I got down on my hands and knees and pulled myself through that hole. So yes, I will be enlightened. I would say if you have maybe a 32 or 33 waist or under, you can fit through depending on how broad your shoulders are. But make sure you go in with your hands above your head and pull yourself through, because as I was saying before, those pillars are quite wide. And when you get halfway through, I don't get claustrophobic, but it was a little weird being half, you know, half my body hanging out of a tree and half in the middle of it. It does make for a great picture to see someone coming out of a tree trunk, which is not to be missed. Oh, last thing I forgot about Todaiji Temple, and you'll be able to pick this out right away, on the top of it is these two golden horns. Definitely check out the pictures. It probably looks like I photoshopped these gold horns onto the top of the building, but I totally did not, and it's totally, I just said totally a lot, but it's very weird to see a horned building. I'm not sure about of the history behind this. If you email me and want to find out more, I can definitely look some up, or you could just Google it yourself. Yes, that's just something else that is distinctive about this temple and really just adds to its beauty and to its size. the next site that I saw, which I'm going to call a Gaijin Guide gem, is called Nigatsudo Hall, and it's a short uphill walk from Todaiji Temple, but is totally worth your time. What it offers you is a place that's not crowded with tourists, it isn't overrun with deer, and it offers a spectacular view of Nara, and Naro Koen for that matter. And also, it has free tea. So basically, it's a sort of out-of-the-way rest stop, if you will, but also a temple. So you have, if you want to say a couple of prayers, or if you want to just look at all the hanging lanterns it has, it's definitely worth it, and you should, without a doubt, stop over here if you're feeling a little tired or templed out, as we say here in Japan. Another worthwhile stop on your Nara loop is Kasuga Taisha Shrine, which is most noted for all the lanterns that line the paths going towards the temple. Twice a year, it has a lantern festival where they light all these lanterns, and I can only imagine what it would be like. It would be certainly, I think, on par with cherry blossom season. Personally, when I went, I had just missed the festival, and it's quite upset, but there's just hundreds and hundreds of lanterns, and to see it at night would really be something unreal. If any of you listeners have any pictures of it, or have actually been there for this lantern festival, please send me an email and tell me what it was like, because I have no doubt that it was gorgeous. So that's a good stop, a nice quiet rest out of the sun if you're making the Nara loop and you're a little tired out or whatnot, but definitely check that out. The last thing I want to talk about in Nara Park, and there's certainly more to do than these four things I've mentioned, but these are sort of the main points. I mean, there's countless smaller temples to see, and you could just have a picnic in the park if that's what you're into, play some frisbee with the deer. But the last thing I want to talk about is the five-storied pagoda, which is the second tallest of in Japan, and it loses out by only a few centimeters to a pagoda in Tokyo. But it is, I mean, this thing is big. Todaiji is large, is wide, is massive and imposing, and the five-story pagoda just sort of shoots up and reaches at the sky. You can definitely snap some great shots. Check mine out on my Flickr account. It's just, I mean, you can't go inside. It's free. It's great to have some poses in front with the deer or whatnot, but you should definitely do a little walk by of this spot on your way in or out of the park. I find that it's a good starting or leaving point. Personally, it was the first thing I saw my friends when we went in, and also the last thing. So we made this kind of nice loop, and everything had this circular, you know, oh, everything connects. It's crazy. What's going on? But yeah, you can definitely hit it on your way back to Kintetsu Nara Station. And basically, that's about it for Nara Park. Thoroughly impressed. Make sure you go on a nice day, because it is a lot of walking by foot. I mean, you don't want to be doing it in the rain, because that would suck. You could probably hit the major attractions in, I think they said, about 3 hours at the information center, but you could definitely spend a whole day in the park. I wouldn't try to do it in less than 3 hours, and 3 hours is probably counting on you power walking it, but I find when you're sightseeing and going to different temples, it's better to take your time, stop and rest, maybe even read a book that you brought along. Otherwise, you kind of just get tired of seeing, oh wow, another wood building. But Nara is definitely worth a day trip if you're anywhere in the Kansai region. I wouldn't set it up as my base camp, just because probably you could do the whole city in a day, maybe a day and a half, but it's definitely will be one of the highlights of your trip to the Kansai region. And now let's talk about Nara! Well, actually, not Nara Park, so don't worry. Please don't tune out, but we're going to be talking about a fertility festival that I went to at Asuka Temple, which is on the very far outskirts of Nara. It's the last stop on the Kintetsu line, and I just sort of went there on a whim. One of my friends got the sheet of paper from his teacher advertising this Japanese fertility festival, and we didn't really know what to expect. I don't even know what we're thinking. But we get there, the festival starts, and it's about, man, at least 400 Japanese people and about 10 gaijin. And we're sitting there, and it's taking forever because they start these introductions of what seems like every monk or priest that is living in Nara or I don't even know where they found these guys. So they introduce all these guys, and we're kind of getting antsy. We're like, should we go? But right as we were considering it, almost put it to a vote, they actually started the real main events. And the appetizer was this absolute beauty of a girl wearing traditional dress, the kimono, and performing what I can only guess is a traditional dance, maybe for fertility or whatever, but check out the video, check out the pictures I have. She's just a classic Japanese beauty, and the dance was incredible. The amount of control she has over her arms and the precision that it required, and the music, you know, was interesting too. Wasn't my favorite. It was played over a loudspeaker, so, you know, that part was okay, but the dance was definitely worth it. And just when we're expecting, okay, the dance is over, you know, what's gonna happen next, we get the treat of all treats. It was absolutely hilarious. And when I talk about hilarious, I'm talking about two old Japanese guys proceeding to act out the act of procreation, and that's the best I can describe. Actually, I'm just going to throw tact out the window. It was one old Japanese guy wearing this freaking crazy mask with the long nose that no doubt resembled Pinocchio or a penis. This episode is going to be explicit, sorry. And another one wearing, you know, like the cute, I guess, maiden mask, and it was quite plump. And they proceeded, it sounds gross, but it was hilarious. First of all, they have the old man who's playing the role of a young steed come out on stage, holding a 2-foot, very thick piece of bamboo. And I know what you're thinking, and yes, it was meant to be his penis. And he holds this thing sort of limply and proceeds to do this sort of stomp dance where slowly he winds it clockwise to become erect. So let me just give you the picture. 80-year-old man wearing traditional dress with a mask with the nose that looks like a penis, holding a 2-foot piece of bamboo between his legs and shaking it all around, and it's just, you have to look at the video because I cannot describe this. And then when you think it couldn't get any better, this plump old Japanese guy wearing a virginal maiden mask comes out, and they proceed to what Barry White would say, "Let's get it on." Oh, okay, I can't sing, but they proceeded to have intercourse, not once, but twice, and in different positions. And I mean, the gaijin were definitely cracking up, and the Japanese people were putting on a pretty good show of keeping a stern face, but I mean, you could see their eyes smiling, because you see these two old guys just going at it, and it's some weird homoerotic shit, and I don't know what to say. But they do a pretty good job, and it's quite funny. And when it's over, everyone's in a good in a good joyous mood, and you know, I think everyone there was ready to get it on, so it did the trick. But that's not the end of it. That's the end of the formal ceremonies, I would say. And once it's over, we sort of all filed out back to the street that has all the booths that sell tons of crap and sell overpriced food. And we're standing there, and we see the two old men from the festival and others all wearing masks walking around holding these bamboo sticks that are sort of split at the end. So if you hit something, it would sort of spread I don't know the English word, but it kind of spreads out. So they're not hitting you with something solid like a baseball bat. And I say hitting you because apparently the tradition is for these old guys to go around smacking people on the butt, and mostly girls. In America, we would call this sexual harassment or multi-million-dollar lawsuit, but in Japan, apparently it's okay and it's custom. Because people, I mean, Some people lined up, and other people would just throw their daughters, I mean, throw them to the wolves to get absolutely spanked. And they're not, I mean, they're not going easy, these old guys. I mean, they live for this day. It's once a year where they get to hit young women on the ass. And it's sort of, I don't even know how to describe it. It's funny when people get hit, they scream and yell, "Itai, itai!" It hurts. And I can verify, because I did get spanked too, and that, it hurts. And it's no joke. I mean, I think they went a little harder on the gaijin, but it's just sort of, what is going on in Japanese culture that allows these old men to go around hitting young women and for everyone to laugh and think it's okay? I mean, it's amusing for the rest of the world, but only amusing because it's in Japan. Imagine an old guy going around on the street in America smacking girls in miniskirts on the butt. I mean, he would be arrested within 5 minutes. And he would be on the nightly news. But here, you know, it's okay. Hey, what the hell? It's Japan. So that part of the festival was thoroughly, thoroughly amazing. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. As you notice, I can't speak when I do a podcast. Sorry. So yeah, I think I'm going to cut the podcast at that. We didn't get to Kyoto or Osaka at all, but it's getting a little long. I feel like I've talked about Nara too much. And you've all probably stopped listening by now. But if you haven't, please send me an email to let me know you're listening. I've been looking at the stats, and I know people. We've got people listening in India, a couple in Japan, some in Great Britain, quite a few from America. But I'd love to hear from you with suggestions saying your sound quality sucks. Well, you know what? That's because I'm doing this podcast in my dorm room, and I can only do it with my roommates out of the room, so there's a bunch of stops and starts. My roommate, by the way, is from South Korea, and we get along great. But, I mean, if you go to Japan for an extended period of time, you have to at least travel to South Korea. All the Koreans I've met have been quite interesting, and why am I plugging Korea on a Japanese podcast? I don't know, but the people are actually great. Really hilarious. Women are beautiful, too. Yeah, so go to Korea and go to Japan if you're in Asia, and keep listening to my podcast if you can stand my whiny rants and over-talking of events. I'm gone at this point. I mean, I'm so tired. I've eaten so much chocolate. It's Valentine's Day. Oh, and about Valentine's Day. I totally forgot about this in the Nara talk. But on Valentine's Day, girls actually give chocolate to guys. I know, I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying this holiday. In America, the guys are always putting out the money, always giving the chocolate, the roses, and what do we get in turn? Well, you know what you get in return, but, you know, we want some chocolate, too, every now and then. So in Japan, on Valentine's Day, women go out and they buy all these chocolates and they give them to their friends, but they also give them to the guys they have crushes on. And yes, I'm only mentioning this because I did get chocolate. I've only been in Japan 3 weeks and already getting chocolate from a secret admirer. Booyah! So that felt good. What else is there? Oh, and then in March 14th, they call it White Day, and this is the day when guys buy chocolate for girls. So, you know, Japan has a little, you know, you get, you give, it has both worlds, the yin and the yang. In Korea, they also have Black Day, which I've had explained to me in Japanese, and I think it's for the people who don't get chocolates on either, I think it's for only guys only who don't get chocolates on Valentine's Day, and they sort of get together. And from what I could make out, they go and eat this certain type of noodle. If you know what Black Day really is, please email me and I can put it in the next show. But, I mean, so they got, I mean, Japan has at least 2 days of chocolate giving, and Korea has 2 days too, and a day for the losers. So that's quite interesting. Yeah, the next show should be good, because I've been taking notes on the crazy Japanese infomercials that I've seen. And let me just give you a little teaser, a little preview of what will be in the next episode. The greatest fitness invention since Bowflex. And only here in Japan. And it's called Rodeo Boy. That's all you get. That's all you get. A little teaser, a little bit of the name. And I will bring you this great invention and how they get off selling it on TV. I'm not quite sure, because it's definitely not for all audiences. Yeah, so I think that'll be it for the show. I should put out another episode in under a week, and I'll be covering my trips to Kyoto and to Osaka and crazy Japanese infomercials. All right, that's going to do it for episode 3 of the Gaijin Guide. I hope at least some part of the episode was useful to you. If you want to see some of the pictures that I've been bragging about, and I did get some good shots, you can check them out at www.flickr.com/photos/gaijin guide. If you want to see the video, check out the blog at Gaijin, G-A-I-J-I-N, guide.blogspot.com. And if you want to get in contact with me and give me some words of encouragement, let me know you're out there, or tell me something I need to fix, you can contact me at gaijinguide@gmail.com. All right, I'll hit you guys up with another episode in under a week. All materials copyright The Gaijin Guide 2007.